League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the very busy voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Always busy, Matthew.
What's going on?
There's a lot going on.
It's frantic.
Today, there's always a lot going on. Of course, we're in the busy world of goalkeeping. The world of goalkeeping never sleeps.
It doesn't, but this particular time, a busy one for you.
Now, as of recording, this is deadline day for League One, League Two, and of course for Europe as well. So there'll be a little bit of movement with goalkeepers today. And knowing that I do have my pulse on the goalkeeping world, it's just keeping an eye on what's going on, liaising with coaches, and making sure that everybody gets the goalkeepers they deserve.
Absolutely. Richard Lee's pulse, everybody. You can just feel it vibrating through the microphone. We are going to go straight into the action from the weekend and a frantic North London derby. Bernd Leno for the opening goal. Christian Eriksen received his parry. There's been a lot of commentary on this one, which I'm going to read out to you, but your thoughts on the goal first.
First and foremost, could he have done better with the goal? Yes. Is it an error? Not really. It annoys me because straight away all the stats come out about unforced errors that Arsenal have conceded or team errors, and they've got the highest since this time last year or start of last season, and Bernd Leno has got the highest number of errors out of any goalkeeper in the league. Well,
that particular goal was credited
as an error,
as a Leno error,
which is subjective. It's subjective. Who says it's an error? Who's the person that judges whether that is an error or not an error? Because some people might look at it and say, actually, he's dived full stretch, got hands to it, and managed to keep it out. Had the initial ball gone in, I would have classified it as an error. Now, you actually look at the situation itself. Of course, with the ball moving and being struck as it was, you look at Bernd Leno, of course, his movement has to be to the left back slightly. And as he's set, he's having to dive back on himself in order to make the save. It's quite a difficult technique to hold the ball when you're doing that. Now, could he have held it? Yes, of course he could. And there are certain goalkeepers that would have. Is it an error? I think probably half the goalkeepers in the Premier League parry that ball. The other question mark is, could he have parried it further away? Well, the problem is when there's not that much pace on the ball and the angle that it's coming in at, unless you're going to try and get fingertips and get it around the post, which is a difficult skill to do, it is quite a difficult save to make. So it annoyed me when I saw that that was then listed as an error because, again, it is subjective. It's not a black and white as to whether it's an error or not.
When I was watching it and I was trying to analyse it, as in Richard Lee analysis, and when Eric Lamella was approaching the 18-yard box, you could see at that moment that Leno almost vigorously started to retreat, as you would, started to step back. And then as he made his dive, as Lamella shot, it looked like he was slightly off balance.
And that's the bit that people don't see. You know, people talk a lot about positioning. There's a good example, actually, Jack Butland, the error that he made against Preston. Now that was an error. It slipped underneath his body where he was backpedaling, and people don't see that because, of course, if a ball gets played long, as a goalkeeper often you'll go from being maybe 20, 25 yards from your goal to having to be 3 yards off your line. So all of a sudden it's a big movement you're having to make, and a big part of that is you need to be set when the shot is struck. Now the Jack Butland one against Preston, he wasn't. He was still on the move, and that was why he never got himself in a position to get down and make the save. There were certain similarities with this one. I actually had one similar myself. It was against Everton, Andy Johnson, always remember it, and it was a header from close range, headed down into the dirt, and I remember getting down and making a half decent parry, and they've gone and scored the rebound. And I was credited or discredited, whatever the word would be, with an error. And it bugged me because I thought, well, actually, I did make the initial save, which wasn't a bad save. And then you're reliant on a bit of help from your defence. Now, I'll go back to my point. Could he have done better? Yes. To say it's an error is very much subjective. I think if the first goal goes in, I would have said it was an error. The fact that it was a rebound and on another day someone comes and helps you out, or on another day, it might even be credited as a good save given the positioning and the fact he had to retreat and the fact he had to get set and so on and so forth. I think to give it as an error is harsh.
Okay. Do you want the analysis?
Go on.
From the main sources who commented on this, Jermaine Genus on Match of the Day 2 said, Leno has to do much better there. That was it. Gary Neville, during the game said Leno has to push it wider than that. He's either got soft hands that pulls it into his body or the hard hand that pushes it away wide. He puts it into a place where Eriksen cannot miss.
I think you just do this to annoy me, don't you?
And Sol Campbell as well at half time. Leno has to at least parry it out wide. If he wants to, he's got to really palm it wide. Whether he's trying to tap it back into his own path, that was it.
It's just so basic, isn't it? I mean, soft hands, another great cliche. It's probably one of my favourites. I don't know which I prefer more, that or flaps at crosses or beating at his near post. I don't know. Soft hands, that's what it's all about, Gary. No, look, could he parry it out wide? The problem is, again, every shot's different. If it's shot with real pace, then it might be one that you deflect wide for a corner. It's an awkward kind of shot. And again, the dive, the angle of the dive doesn't lend itself to getting a big, firm parry away. Ultimately, it's a catch or it's a parry exactly like he did. Now, he felt that he couldn't hold on to the ball. He felt that he obviously had to parry it. You weren't really going to be able to parry it further than that because of the angle of your dive, the pace on the ball. You can't get a big parry away. It doesn't exist, Gary. And again, Jermaine Genius, those comments, fine. Again, very basic, no real insight, no real breaking down of the technique. The thing that bugs me is that I'm watching the game and then to fast forward to the second half, a shot from Ceballos that Lloris saved from under the bar, which, for those that watched it, it was a shot from Ceballos, a very good save from Lloris under the bar, very athletic, and it goes for a corner. He then comes and catches the corner. Not once did they mention the save or the catch from the corner. Not once did they say Hugo Lloris's name, even though he was a major part of that particular play. I'm watching it, and I'm just waiting for it. Like, at least say something about the save. They didn't even. It was as if the save never even happened. And for me, watching that save, it's brilliant goalkeeping. The reason it's brilliant goalkeeping is the ball's just popped up a tiny bit. Lloris has seen this and dropped to a yard from his line. He would have got beaten if he was 3 yards from his line because of the dip on the ball. So he's dropped to a yard from his line. Brilliant decision making. Position was absolutely perfect. Great athleticism. Makes a save. Corner. Comes and catches the cross on the corner. Brilliant goalkeeping.
It was funny that because you felt like even the production editor, the floor manager in the studio was trying to prompt them because he then got the cameras to focus on Hugo Lloris just before the corner as if to say, guys, reference the save.
Yeah.
They didn't. Martin Tyler, to his credit, did sort of semi-reference it, but Neville focused on Ceballos and the impact that he had as a substitute. I think in that scenario, the problem is if that goes in, Lloris is then hammered because it's a save that, cliche, he should make.
But this again goes back to something that isn't recognised when it comes to goalkeeping, in that there's so many decisions that go into every save. The decision-making on his positioning was perfect. Here's a good example, actually, and one that is a good lesson for a lot of younger goalkeepers. We're often told to close down the angle. Now, that makes sense when they're approaching goal and they're maybe 12 yards from goal. Because consider this, if they're 12 yards from goal and you manage to get to, say, 8-9 yards and you're close enough to then spread yourself, then, of course, you consider the angle. The amount of goal they've got to aim at is very, very small. Now, as soon as they're 25 yards from goal, whether you're 1 yard off your line or 5 yards off your line or 5 yards off your line, you're not narrowing the angle because they're that far away. There is no angle. Now, I often see goalkeepers make this error where they'll be 4 or 5 yards off their line from shots from distance. Why are you that far off your line? You're not closing down the angle. All you're doing is reducing the amount of reaction time that you've got. So it was a great lesson from Lloris yesterday, especially given that the ball had popped up and the shot was struck with dip. If he's 5 yards off his line, he gets beaten. So this is where it is very, very good goalkeeping and people don't see it because they don't have that knowledge. You get the basic comments again, soft hands, firm hands. Like, ridiculous. And every goalkeeper watching, I spoke to a few, cringing. And funnily enough, I put a tweet out and it got retweeted and liked by a lot of goalkeepers, professional goalkeepers, because they all understood just how good that little bit of goalkeeping was. And yet it wasn't commented on at all by Gary Neville. Incredible.
Worth referencing Bernd Leno's very good save and the fact that he reacted moments after conceding that goal. A really good save from Heung-Min Son. And actually, Heung-Min Son's reaction to it was to suggest, crikey, how has he saved that?
He reacted because he probably didn't even know that it was being referenced as an error. If I'd have done that in a game, I'd have thought that nothing would have been said because those that know goalkeeping, you know, I love an error rating. I'm probably giving that a 2 out of 10. So I'm probably thinking, well, that's probably not been mentioned. So it's not a reaction because I'm just carrying on my game as per usual. And you're right. He was excellent for the rest of the game.
He was. We're going to finish on Neville's reaction to that save and then we'll move on. You don't have to react to it because you are burning up right now. He did say the one Leno does here, I think, is anticipate where Son wants to go. It's just near enough to him. good save. Moving on, Rui Patricio in the game between Everton and Wolves. A mix-up with Connor Cody. Now, you've seen this, I've seen this. I feel like we're going to have differing views on this one. It was essentially a ball into nothing from Andre Gomez. Connor Cody puts his hand out as if to say, wait for the pass back. Rui Patricio misreads it. He runs out. Cody passes it back. Rui Patricio stutters. It's all a big mess. And Richarlison scores.
Two things. It's miscommunication is the first thing. It's as simple as that. Because could Patricio have come and smothered the ball? Yes, he could. That would have been the best play in that situation, because then he would have had the ball in his hands, danger over. Whereas even with a pass back, there is still danger because there is a clearance, there's a touch, etc., etc. So the best play is that he comes and collects the ball. The second part to it is a stutter. Now, this is where, this is also a form of communication. It's not just talking, which you could imagine. You're the goalkeeper at Goodison Park and you're having to communicate to your defenders. It's difficult. You've got 40,000 fans screaming and you're trying to communicate with someone 10 yards away. It's not easy. So the stutter is the miscommunication, because then Cody would have seen that he's still on his line and made the decision that he is staying on his line, and that's why I'm passing it. Now, Patricio realises maybe just before the pass is taken, I can come and get this and I can then clear all danger. And it's that split second. The decision they both made at the same time was the opposite decision. One decision, of course, from Connor Cody is to pass it. Decision from Rui Patricio is, I'm going to come and get it. The problem is they made it at the identical same time. And that's where the error was. Is it an error? Yeah, of course it is. And I think as much as you could scream and shout, and no doubt Patricio is probably saying to him, I've shouted for it, I've shouted keepers. Connor Cody's also saying to him, I've said I'm passing it back. I've put my hand out to show that I'm passing it back. So it's an error on both parts, but at the same time, it's just horrendous timing from both of them.
Crucially, in this one, neither of them had a go at the other.
Which is good.
Cody turned around, didn't react. Rui Patricio turned around. So maybe there was an understanding that they just had a misunderstanding. And again, on this one, Rui Patricio bounced back. He made a great save to deny Richarlison his hat-trick, and a very good save low to his right to deny Yerry Mina from a header.
Yeah, and I love the fact that you're right, the reaction was perfect from both of them, because rather than having a row on the field, which you often see, and of course he'll be frustrated in that situation because neither of them come out looking particularly good, but I think, and this is where you see this with the better teams, I'll have an understanding where they'll say, look, any issues, we don't do it on the pitch. We wait till we get in at halftime and then we'll discuss it. And no doubt you'd have looked at that. And let's say they both watched the video. I've got no doubt they're both saying exactly what I'm saying now, which is Rui Patricio saying, look, I realised I could come at that moment. Now, if you were to critique both of them, you would say to Rui Patricio, could you have made your decision slightly earlier? Because if he had made it a split second earlier, Connor Cody sees him rushing out, doesn't pass it back, of course. And similarly, from Connor Cody's point of view, the question mark or the critiquing would have been, well, look, as you're passing it, can you be looking up that little bit more out of the corner of your eye, your peripheral vision? Can you see that the goalkeeper's coming? And again, the danger would have been avoided. So in the end, for me, yes, it's an error. Would you say more so on Patricio's part? I'd certainly say that both have to take responsibility for the error. And it happens from time to time. We've seen the best do it.
Right, we are going to switch across the pond now, Richard, to MLS and Toronto v New England Revolution, formerly managed by Brad Friedel, of course. And a goalkeeper that Brad Friedel worked with was Matt Turner in the Revs goal, had a very good game. Quentin Westberg for Toronto, not so much. He let a Gustavo Bow strike slip underneath his body. A bit similar, we've mentioned it already, Jack Butland against Preston.
Yeah, look, it's an error that I've seen hundreds of times, and I'm sure most goalkeepers have experienced and done themselves. It was similar to a classic David James one I remember for England many years ago as well, and that got remembered, where it's you could even argue the Robert Green one against America that time, where it's a simple decision as to which way you, whether you collapse your hands and you go for the dive, or whether it's more of a scoop technique. Now, the thing with a scoop technique is that it's not necessarily balls that are just at you. So if you can consider this, and if you can picture this, you're setting your set stance. So you might have your shoulders, your feet shoulder width apart. You are now ready, set for the shot. Now, if you were to do the scoop, it's not just in front, because even if it's slightly to the side, let's say it's slightly to your left, you would move your left leg out and then you would perform the scoop technique. Similarly, to if it's your right hand side, you would move your right leg out and perform the scoop technique. So actually, you would use your scoop technique about a 3 yard radius, maybe a yard and a half either side, you could still perform a very adequate scoop technique. I then argue anything outside of that, you then turn your hands and it becomes a dive, a low dive, mid dive, or whatever it might be. The problem with this was very simple. He's turned his hands. He's gone for a dive. He's gone to collect the ball like that. Really, it should have been the scoop technique, because it's ended up going in that little corridor between your hands, under your hip almost. And it's a really awkward place to get to, because you can't actually, even if you get your hip down, you can't really trap the ball because it's too far inside in order to try and trap it. So it was just the incorrect technique. I think in hindsight, had he got his set right and gone with the scoop, moved his left leg over, for those that haven't seen it, certainly worth looking, moved his left leg over, gone for the scoop, he would have been able to get his body behind it that much more. So even if he didn't collect the ball, it certainly wouldn't have gone through him and gone in the goal like it did.
Goalkeepers Union in full force as well after that game. Matt Turner, who, by the way, would be great to get on the podcast. A really good story. Only came into goalkeeping around the age of 16. Did play as a kid, then pretty much gave it up. It was the 2010 World Cup that got him back into it. He's now thriving at New England Revolution, but did say after the game, "I would never celebrate another goalkeeper's error." Pause. But it was nice to get the point.
Love it.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
We're down in League Two for Keeper Capers this week. Forest Green Rovers. Not the first time we've done Forest Green. We did them at a stage last season. Robert Sanchez letting a ball slip under his feet. This time, Jojo Wollacott on loan from Bristol City. Now, this appears to me as a goalkeeper who seems very comfortable with the ball at his feet. Quite ironically, it's exactly that which has done him.
Yeah, first and foremost, I want to speak about Jojo because it's someone that I know personally, and he is an excellent young goalkeeper. In fact, they've got two really good young goalkeepers at Forest Green now, with Lewis Thomas as well, who's played a couple of games this season. The reason I wanted to highlight this one, or we wanted to highlight this, first and foremost, of course, it's an error, one that no doubt he'll learn from, but Forest Green play a really interesting style with their goalkeeper. Effectively, the goalkeeper joins in as another defender. So you'll often find that he will be in front of the back four, which, for most goalkeepers, even the thought of it will make them a little bit nervous. So you've got your two centre-backs behind you and you're playing square passes to your centre-back. So you're looking to thread balls into midfield. Now, in theory, it's quite clever because, of course, you've got that extra player. You can get overloads. You can look to play through the thirds and maybe build attacks. And on the whole, it seems to have worked reasonably well for them. And given that both Jojo and Lewis are so good with their feet, they've been able to get into that little pocket, almost like that quarterback position, and be spraying passes to the left winger, maybe putting it over the top for the striker to run onto. So it makes a lot of sense. But at the same time, it's incredibly risky because you only need to lose possession once and it's an open goal. One misplaced pass, they will score, which, you know, you balance up the pros and cons to this. And I feel a bit sorry for Jojo because he's caught in that pocket. He's looked to play. He has got tackled and it is an open goal. And it's as simple as that. You know, I think it's one of them where we need to be careful when we're looking at goalkeepers and we're making judgments, because if you're playing in a team like that, you are going to make more mistakes. If you are an Alisson or an Edison, for instance, when you're relied upon so much with your feet, like we saw with Alisson last season, you're going to make the odd error because you're having to be so comfortable on the ball. You're having to play square passes, balls into midfield that could easily be intercepted, and there is nothing protecting your goal. And unfortunately for Jojo, it wasn't meant to be, and it was a day to forget for him. But just really interesting, because I think when you're put under pressure in that way, not many goalkeepers are. So naturally, he will make more mistakes this season like that, which is slightly unfair on him. But at the same time, from Forest Green's point of view, they'll look at it that they'll score more goals because he is playing that particular role.
Yeah, Tristan Abraham's proving to be his nemesis. He was the man who nicked the ball off Jojo Wollacott. And then, of course, a short back pass. Wollacott races out, takes Abraham's down. He then gets sent off to compound his misery. But just reacting to what you're saying there, are we talking overlapping goalkeepers now?
Essentially, it's, do you know, people are always trying to find something a little bit different. And I guess if you look at it purely from a theory point of view, you want to create overloads all over the field. Man City do it brilliantly. Overload after overload after overload. And of course, you make your way up the field and you create scoring opportunities. So of course, the goalkeeper, more often than not, is a spare man. How often is the goalkeeper marked in regular play? It's often the get out will be to go back to the goalkeeper. So you can see what the thinking is. The problem is when you're playing in a formation like that, and I'll go back to a season I had at Brentford where it was such a simple game that I had, which was goal kicks. I hit into one area. I had one job to do. Corners, I didn't really have to come for because I had two massive centre-backs who won everything in the air. And I was pretty good at saving shots. So actually, I got judged on my shot-stopping ability that season, and I ended up getting all the Player of the Years. Now, I knew that my job that particular season was very simple. If I'm asked to play in that Forest Green team and I'm having to go into midfield sometimes and play as a, you know, as a sweeper or play as a defensive midfielder effectively, and I'm being asked to come for more crosses, I'm being asked to take this hugely advanced position, well, I'm going to make a lot of mistakes. Am I getting player of the year? Probably not, because fans will be looking at it and saying, well, he's made 6 or 7 errors, even though it might be me playing in that position has helped create 12 goals, for argument's sake. And that's the thinking behind it. The general idea is clever, but it will mean whoever plays in goal, whether it's Jojo, whether it's Lewis, whether it's someone else, they're going to make more errors as a goalkeeper playing in that formation.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper keeper.
Rightly and wrongly.
Yep, rightly or wrongly. David De Gea at St Mary's for Manchester United against Southampton. A Yannick Vestergaard header. In my opinion, this is solely down to Victor Lindelof. There have been some arguments. We've had some correspondence suggesting that David De Gea could have been a couple of steps to his right. Now, I've frozen the frame. And when you look at De Gea's position as Vestergaard jumps for that header and then connects, De Gea is in the perfect position that he could be in, surely.
Yeah, perfect. Do you know what? If he's 2 yards over to his right and is headed back to the left, everyone's saying, well, why are you stood so far over to the right?
Exactly.
And ultimately, when a cross comes in, more often than not, that's the other part, is you consider what a striker's taught. Now, you've got to be really careful with this because, for instance, a striker's always taught to hit the ball across goal. So you'll often see goalkeepers almost guessing because they know what a striker's been taught. They're through on goal, maybe on a slight angle. They're told to hit it across goal because, of course, if the goalkeeper makes the save and parries, someone else can follow in. AKA what happened yesterday in the North London Derby. We just spoke about it with Leno. That's exactly what a striker's taught. So sometimes you'll get the goalkeeper reading the striker. Now, you've got to be careful to do that because, of course, if they're very, very clever, they'll then do you at your near post, for instance. So in this situation,
bear in mind as well, Yannick Vestergaard is a centre-back. Does he have to factor that in?
But when it's a header, if a ball's crossed in, you're often taught to head back across goal. So even that, bearing that in mind, not that David De Gea should take his position based on that, but it's not obvious that Vestergaard's going to head it to his right in the other corner. That's not an obvious header for him to do. He's effectively rising up above Lindelof and he's looking to hit the target. And in the end, it's a brilliant header. But you're right, you pause it and you'll always base it on percentages. Now, where would you place David De Gea in the goal in order to have the highest percentage of making the save? Well, I'd say that where he is pretty good because he can get to the right to an extent and he can get back across himself to an extent. But bearing in mind the header's from 6 yards, of course, if it's in the corner either side, it beats him. So it's very easy to look at a goal and be like, well, it beat him there. Why didn't he stand there? Well, of course, it's easy in hindsight, but then it might have been a completely different play had David De Gea taken up a different position. Imagine he'd taken up a position 2 yards to his right. It might be that the header then goes back across him and we're questioning him from a different reason. So sometimes you just can't win. What I would say, and the only thing I questioned when I watched it was actually the minute before that, where he's then made the save and the type of save that he made. He likes the top hand and he's gone with a punch, which I found interesting. I think that other goalkeepers may well use a different technique there. Now, whether he could have held it or not, I think is up for debate. I think the fact that he's gone for a punch and it's gone into the area it has, I would question that technique because in the end it was neither here nor there. It was never going to go far enough away that we're then saying he's cleared the danger. And similarly, I don't know if the top hand was necessarily needed there. I think that if he'd gone with two hands, which was possible given that he went with the top hand, he might have been able to hold it or maybe tip it over the bar or maybe had a slightly different outcome. So if we're questioning Leno for the goal that he conceded, I'd argue that maybe we questioned De Gea for the same thing. I'd also argue that we don't question either of them because in that moment, they've made a split second decision and they've tried to get the ball away from danger. They've both parried in different ways and unfortunately for them, they both ended up in goals. Interestingly, one, Leno gets blamed. In another, De Gea doesn't, even though, of course, he has been blamed for so many up to this point. But it's just interesting how we evaluate goalkeepers. One other I wanted to touch on a slight tangent, but a great example, again, where he hasn't even been questioned, was Aaron Ramsdale this weekend. Now, Aaron Ramsdale, for me, brilliant start to the season. He was excellent again this game. And the goal that Jamie Vardy scored, is it a Ramsdale fault? No, but could Ramsdale have done something a little bit different? Yes. I'm sure that if he looks at that again and looks at his positioning, in the end, he's caught in no man's land, mainly due to the fact the defence has been poor. They haven't won the initial header. It ends up going all the way through to Vardy, who then is able to lob him from 25 yards. Fantastic lob
into
the corner.
Let's not take anything away from that finish.
Oh, what a finish it is. But again, this is my point, is that you can look at every goal and you can critique every single goal and say, oh, could the keeper have done this? Could the keeper have done that? Ultimately, there's always places that we can learn. To then say De Gea should make a save, going back to the initial point, No, for me, I just think that it's an okay first save. I think there might have been something else he could have done. Then I think in the second instance, he's got himself into a good position. Anything around him, I think we see a fantastic save, aka the one he made against Sevilla that time. Brilliant save. Anything around him, he makes a save. But of course, if it's headed into the corner from 6 yards, there's nothing you can do.
Okay, you are Richard Wrightley. Well, that's it for another week, Richard.
That is indeed enjoyable, as always.
Very enjoyable. Your phone is going crazy, by the way, so I should let you go to get these deals over the line.
Busy man today. Busy man.
It is the Goalkeepers Union podcast in association with GK Icon, in association with Goalkeepers 365, and in association with Love Sport Radio. We will see you next week.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.